OA RISE stands for Recovery Inspires Shared Experiences, and we are glad that you are all here. As with all OA meetings, OA RISE is run entirely by OA members who are volunteering their time to make this meeting happen. On occasion, there are glitches in online meetings that cannot be anticipated. Please bear in mind that we are doing our best, so we ask that you take any negative reactions to your sponsors. However, we would be happy to hear from you if you would like to provide us with kind and constructive feedback. Thank you for your support. Let me see what this thing is saying. Okay. Now, will all those who wish, please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. As we, our unity with diversity policy, as we extend the heart and hand of the OA Fellowship to those who still suffer, let us be mindful of OA's unity with diversity policy, which respects our differences, yet unites us in the solution to our common problem. Whatever problem you may have with food, you are welcome at this meeting. And now we'll have the OA preamble. Is that you, Kathy? Unmute yourself.
I'm Kathy. I'm a grateful recovering compulsive overeater. OA is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting or accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer.
Okay, great. And about this meeting, this is a speaker meeting, and we will also have Q&A. At this time, all attendees are muted. This meeting is being recorded so that an audio-only recording can be posted on the oarise.org website. If there is a Q&A in this session and you have a question for the speaker, but do not want your voice to be heard on the recording, please send your question to a co-host, and they are marked co-host with their name on the screen, through the chat, and we will read your question for you. Here are a few tips for participating in this Zoom meeting. One, our chat feature is currently turned off, and it will remain so until the end of the meeting. You may chat with any co-host if you need assistance. Please note that speakers are only listed as co-hosts so that they have ease of access to Zoom features. They will not be able to respond to questions in the chat. So if you have any questions or concerns during the meeting, please ensure you communicate with co-hosts who do not have speaker in their title. Two, you can change your name as it appears on Zoom. If you are willing, please add your geographical location after your name so we can see where everyone is from. To do this, click on the Participants tab at the bottom of your screen, and a list of attendees will open up in a window pane. Select your own name and click on the tab that says More next to your name and choose Rename. Three, out of courtesy to the other attendees and the speakers, if you get up and move around during the meeting, if you need to eat, check your phone, or talk to someone who is in the room with you, please turn off your video feed so that your actions will not be distracting to others. If it is necessary, we may turn off your video feed, but we'll be happy to turn it back on when you are ready. Just send a message in chat to any co-host and they will enable your video again. Please note that specific foods may be mentioned at this meeting. Five, we will take a 5-minute break at the end of the first and the second hour. And finally, just a reminder that the opinions expressed here today are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. So we are beginning the recording. We are starting the recording now. Okay, who will read the 12 steps and the 12 traditions?
Rosalie and Christina.
Okay.
Hi, everyone. I'm Rosalie, compulsive overeater. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Okay, next. You're muted.
Okay, there we go. Hi, my name is Christina, and I'm a grateful compulsive eater. 1, these are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group would never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Christina. According to our seventh tradition, we are self-supporting through our own contributions. We send all contributions and excess of our expenses directly to the World Service Office to help carry the message to other compulsive eaters. Our meeting expenses are a Zoom subscription and the OA Rise website, which includes the cost of extra storage so we can upload the speaker recordings for you. Contributions can be made by PayPal to our email address, info@oarise.org. There is also a Contribute Now button at oarise.org website. A suggested donation of $3 will allow these OA Rise speaker meetings to continue. Okay, now let's begin. Welcome, everyone. I see at this point we have 63 people. I'm sure over the course of 3 hours, it's going to come and go. And I'm excited about today, and I have a feeling it's going to go very quickly, and we all are a beautiful group. Welcome, welcome. This today is a continuation of the topic that we did for OA Rise last April, which was called Flexibility Alongside Discipline. So, and I'm wondering if Chris, Angie, and June are here. So that's when Judy and I, we began this. And at the end of that day, that talk with flexibility alongside discipline, that we began talking about the aging process, that we were all older, and this is all a new topic for us. So I'm very passionate about this. We're calling it part two, but really it's a continuation. And so here we go. Flexibility alongside discipline as we change, mature, and grow in OA. We continue to explore this flexibility alongside discipline as we grow, learn, and age. And I'm using the word age in its most positive way, and how age may cause our needs to change, and how fortunate we are in OA because it's been available for over 60 years. And as a result, our fellowship has many members who have achieved long-timer status, some with 40 plus years of abstinence. This is a design for living. Now we have members who can share the examples of their experience from newcomer to long-timer. For some, habits change. Others, many practices stay the same. We stay long enough to find what works for ourselves, combining that with group strength. We continue to question flexibility and sameness with the tools and continue to promote a discussion about it. We emphasize discipline. We always seek direction. We always use the steps. We always use the tools. So there's two main ideas here. About flexibility alongside discipline, and because we're all here longer, aging and maturing, acknowledging how we've grown spiritually and emotionally, mentally, and to address our aging bodies. And what you contribute and what you take away depends on how this speaks to you. The speakers have decades of abstinence. Also, many of them have had big changes in their lives, loss, health issues. They've been maintaining many different kinds of goals. We've all done that. That includes me too. We have lived through them. We have been in OA, some of us, most of our lives, and have more in OA than not in OA, and have experienced the promises. We have grown along spiritual lines. We sorted through our mess and cleared the path to ourselves. We did the steps, we learned, we grew, and we grew up. We found we could help others and have a beautiful fellowship of support. We learned we could have food in its proper perspective, not have it be a friend, a drug, or a crutch. So that I came into OA in my 20s, and now I'm 65. Of course, I didn't start my timer. I'm looking at the time. And so I'm very passionate about both topics, and that when I first came in, I needed the rigidity, and now I am extremely flexible, but it's all in the hands of a higher power. But that could never happen through a lot of trust and trial and error and conversation. So that's why that topic's important. And then actually, aging's never been a topic for me. I always saw myself as youthful, I think because I had much older parents. And wow, I sailed through my 50s, but something about my 60s, wow, it's been really, really noticeable. And I would just like to have more conversations about that. And as I talk about it, I hear so many that do. So a lot of us are going to be talking about all of this different stuff. Important thing is we continue this conversation. Let me see. So yeah, just so let's see. Okay. So many topics, as we posted on the OA Rise website, like flexibility with discipline helps with freedom from starting overthinking. The main thing is letting the 12 steps change us as they do, that for most of us too, who we were and how we are now are completely unrecognizable. We're going to be exploring our changed ideas and attitudes, many from extreme to serene, that we've learned to let go of fear, and we've leaned into trust and joy, that we do adapt to our changing bodies, our metabolism, medical conditions, while maintaining abstinence, to be flexible so that we bend and not break. We can learn to be flexible alongside discipline to continue the lifelong abstinence and lifelong fellowship with many deep and long-lasting relationships. And as a reminder too, this meeting welcomes everyone, though it is not a training for newcomers. This is a chance for long timers to have a discussion about how it's been and what we've learned. So you don't have to go very far to find definitions of the words age and aging. And many that we've heard, which may affect us, are things like withering, shriveling, declining, failing, crumbling, deteriorating, disintegrating. This is crazy to me. I mean, if you go to a dictionary and you find that word, those are the words that will come up immediately. And to dig deeper, because we know stinking thinking and then healthy positive thinking, along with everything else we do holistically for us and physically, spiritually, mentally, everything we learn in the program, that the words we use, how we think, how important this is. So I had to dig even deeper and find these positive age words that some of you may enjoy, like ripening, evolving, flowering, blossoming, advancing, improving. For some of us, mellowing, developing, maturing, progressing, perfecting, mushrooming, arriving, but mostly thriving. So, this is great. We're doing great on time. And I see this as between the two main topics and everyone that can share their experiences, strength and hope. This is such a huge, huge topic. And you're going to hear no matter what, you can stay absent. Of course you can. God is everywhere and in everything, but you make the choice. Let's see. We can always become our best us, of course. The 12 steps, everything is here. You will become your ideal you. And certainly this has nothing to do with perfection. Many of us have to back off the edge of perfection. This is about finding the real you, the ideal you, and worst of all, not being perfect, as some people think OA is going to make them perfect or to be perfect for OA. I've run across these many, many things. It's just so interesting. So then, and like and Judy mentioned before, we want to continue this topic, this conversation in a meeting going forward in some way, in some fashion, at some time. We will do this. Okay, great. So we've got these four fabulous speakers today. Each are going to speak about 20 minutes. And there will be a Q&A after every speaker, 10 minutes. and then open sharing and questions for all also at the end.
5 minutes.
With 5 minutes break at each hour. So actually, no, I've done really good. I'm, according to this, I'm about 4 minutes early. So I'm going to stop. I didn't want to, I was not really going to be one of the speakers in my whole story and all that. I wanted to say just that, introduce my four lovely ladies, and we can begin now. Let me introduce Dee. So of all the people that I have speaking today, some I've known a long time, some not so much, but Dee is actually my oldest, longest friend that I've stayed with, stayed in connection with all these years. She is coming today from Arizona, and we've changed and grown a lot. It's pretty amazing. So here is my friend Dee. Please welcome Dee.
Hello, everybody. Hey. Family. Oh, wait, family. So wonderful to be here today. And thank you, Rossi, for putting this whole thing together. I was starting to feel a little emotional in your, just in your introduction of thinking about the whole evolution of not only of what I've seen OA age as I first came into the program, but how I have seen myself and you and the people that I have known over the years. So to begin, I'll just quickly qualify. My name is Dee. I'm recovering from obesity and compulsive eating. I came into OA in 1992. So I am celebrating 29 years of abstinence and maintenance of a 100-pound weight release. And I will quickly share my before photo with you just so we have some evidence of of what I used to look like. And at that time, I weighed in excess of 210 pounds, probably a little, I probably went a little higher at even after that photo, which was taken in 1990. That was probably, that was, I'd say my top weight was around 210. I think I probably got a little more than that, but I didn't, that was my top, my known measured weight. I'm only 4'10" tall. So being 100 pounds overweight is twice the weight of what my normal body size should be. And so that was a burden, obviously, a huge burden. And so I have, you know, I feel that I've had a lot of changes in my approach to my body, like how I view myself, my body image. When you're 100 pounds overweight, it's a whole different viewpoint of the world. And I certainly had a different view of myself. When I came into OA, being that overweight, I was extremely ashamed of myself. It was a shame of myself. And like I carried it all, like I carried all the blame for who I was and what I had become. And really, you know, why I came to OA was because I, like everyone else, we reach a point within ourselves where we got to a bottom, and the only real solution that we could see, the way out, was a spiritual solution. And so that appealed to me at that time. It had not appealed to me in years prior. So, I was, when I came into OA, I was just, you know, a few months before my 31st birthday, and I just turned 60 this past August. So I have spent, you know, I've now been in OA as long as I had not been in it prior. to me, that seems like a sort of a significant milestone to achieve that. I've been in OA as long, and I obviously have to say that the last 30 years of my life have been the best years of my life, because prior to that, it was a lot of shame and pain. So as I thought about what I would share about today, and Rossi talked about some of the topics that we kind of each came up with a little theme for our talk. And my theme is from extreme to serene. And when I first came into OA, the reason why I think I chose the word extreme was because when I came into OA, one of the things that I heard, and I sort of adopted it almost as like my motto for myself, was extreme diseases require extreme measures. And for me at that time, that was absolutely true. I needed to be extreme in all of the different changes and approaches that I was going to do, especially surrounding my relationship with food. So I readily, in the very beginning, adopted a structured, weighed and measured food plan. And it, you know, it was a no flour, no sugar, and no many other things that, you know, which was important for me at the time because it eliminated all of my binge and trigger foods and texture foods and all of the things that had led me into trouble with food. And I really needed to learn to separate my emotions from my food. And, you know, because I ate for every reason, every emotional reason that you can think of, you know, boredom, sadness, companionship, loneliness, joy, celebration. I mean, I overate for all of those things. And so I needed something that was structured and disciplined so that I could eat according to the plan as opposed to eating according to my emotional fluctuations of the day or the circumstance or the holiday or whatever it was. And so the extremity of that to me was I weigh and measure everything so that I can be precise. And I really looked at that as a surrender because the surrender piece was, like it says in step three, we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand him. And for me, I had, part of the beginning of being able to do with my life was I felt like, well, I have to learn first to surrender my food. And then when I learn to surrender my food, then that's the beginning of learning to surrender my life. And so it was that daily practice of surrender by putting, using the scale and the measuring cups and the measuring spoons to be able to do that. The no flour and no sugar, I believe, completely changed my body chemistry. I no longer had cravings. I was able to function. And that was a really important thing that I needed for myself then. One thing that I kind of always like to share is what normally goes along with weighing and measuring food plan daily is a calling in or a somehow reporting of your food to the sponsor. I had a sponsor at that time. I have always had a sponsor in this program, but interestingly enough, I did not call my food in. I did not do a committed daily thing like that. However, the one thing that I did do was I called in my feelings daily. And I felt like that this was also another sort of extreme measure for me because I was a shut down, isolated person when I came into OA and I kept a lot of secrets, and especially about food and about things that I felt, things that I felt about myself or things that I felt about other people. And it was my feelings that were really the thing that needed attention for me. Weighing and measuring my food was my kind of practical daily application of the program, but to work the inside, the spiritual part of the program was working on my feelings. And so, and because I knew that if I didn't get those feelings under control, or at least know how to deal with them, then I would probably go back to the food at some point. And I didn't want that to happen for me. So I called in my feelings, and I do still tend to do that often. I don't do it daily anymore, but I do, that's what my calls are with my sponsor these days. It's all about my feelings and it's about my, my progress and the things that I'm doing in my life and how I'm handling things. So the other thing too, is I did cop somewhat of an attitude when I first came in because My weight and measured food plan gave me a lot of success in abstinence and also my weight release. I released 100 pounds in 13 months in those first 13 months. And I started to, you know, I developed friends in OA who were doing the same thing as me. And when sometimes when that happens, or at least it happened to me, I started thinking that everyone else in OA needed to do what I do. And if you didn't do what I do, and I saw you, you know, having problems or whatever, I had judgments. There were judgments that I had, thinking that, oh, you're not doing it right, or you're not being honest enough, or whatever. It was like I didn't have enough of a maturity and enough of a perspective to understand what other people go through. I only had my own experience. And so that was my lens of what I was looking at. Over the years, after a couple of years of abstaining and maintaining my weight, I got a new sponsor who wanted me to call in my food every day. And then, you know, which I was happy to do. This was the one time during my time in program that I did that, because she asked me to. And so I started doing that. And even, you know, I had a food plan that worked for me. It was a very solid foundation that I had for myself. And it was very interesting to me how suddenly the sponsor wanted me to start changing certain things about it. And I started to kind of understand that, why would I change something that works? And I realized that she was wanting me to change things because she felt uncomfortable with what I was eating rather than understanding what was working for me. And that really helped me to kind of change my mindset. Like I thought, maybe I'm doing that to other people too. So that was kind of a little bit of a change in my development and my attitude around that extremity that I had, the extremes. I mean, I was so extreme, at least in my mindset, that I even wrote a story that got published in the first edition of the abstinence book for OA. And the story is called Going to Extremes. And in that story, I just wanted to read like maybe a couple of pieces out of it, of some of the things that I said in there. Some of them I still, like to this day, I still hold to, and some things I have let go of. When I will say this, and this maybe will, kind of give you a little bit of a perspective. So when I came to believe that the disease of compulsive overeating was a serious, unrelenting, and progressive illness, I understood that extreme measures are required for ongoing recovery. For me, extreme measures meant giving up the foods that were keeping me in my disease: sugar, alcohol, flour, caffeine, fried food, fatty food, and other personal binge foods are no longer a part of my life. And that is still mostly true today. Extreme measures also meant following a defined food plan. So I eat my meals at specified time intervals, and I weigh and measure all of my portions, even in restaurants. So today I don't measure my food in restaurants. I don't even necessarily weigh and measure all of my food anymore. I've developed a trust in my higher power, and also an inner muscle within myself that I have a much better ability to discern how much is the right amount. And I do that, you know, maybe I guess in some ways it is a form of measuring, but like I use certain size bowls or a certain size plate. So where I'm not actually putting it on a scale or measuring cup, but I am understanding that the portion is what it would look like if I did put it on a scale or measuring cup. So I don't need to necessarily do that. I don't necessarily today eat all of my meals on a structured time frame. It's very fluid now. I eat more according to when my body tells me I'm hungry, rather than I must eat at, you know, so and so and so and so and so, you know, I must eat every 4 hours. which is what I did in the beginning because that's what they told me to do. Today I do, I actually eat less food today than I did in the beginning. And I actually, at some, a few points, have tried to go back to that original food plan that I had in the beginning. And I know I just couldn't do it now because it's too much food for me. I'm 30 years older than I was then. And it's not necessarily that I'm less active, but it's that I, my body has changed. I mean, I know that I've had a metabolic change. My metabolism is different. I actually went through menopause early, which wasn't surprising because I, you know, that's genetically why I did, but I, you know, went through menopause in my 40s. And so, you know, what I have noticed now is I noticed it over a gradual period of time that it started to become more and more, like I had to be more and more careful about how much food I eat and also how much exercise I do, because any fluctuation in either one of those things would have a weight creep. And so, you know, in order to keep on top of that, I have to adjust, you know, and so it's not, so I can't just follow that strict, you know, rigid thing anymore. I have to be more fluid with it and understand, what do I need? Do I need more of one thing or another? So those are some things that I wanted to share. Some of the other, one other thing that I wanted to say was, one other thing here. For ongoing recovery, abstinence needs to be the most important thing in my life without exception. That has not changed. I believe I need to be abstinent while working and living the steps. This gives me the clarity to see myself for who I really am. And when I am overeating, when I was overeating, I couldn't see past the first bite. Abstinence lifts me out of my self-will and brings me in line with God's will. And it's God's will for me to abstain so that I can live my life to the fullest. And that's, you know, one of the things. So living my life to the fullest. Some of the achievements, I guess, are accomplishments that I've made in my recovery. When I came into OA in 1992, I was married. And unfortunately, I kind of say that marriage did not survive my recovery, because I changed too much. I matured, I grew internally, spiritually, and I was no longer compatible with that husband. So I divorced and then was on my own for a while. And then I met another man who was really more suited to what I wanted and needed in my life. And so I have my husband now, will be celebrating our 20th wedding anniversary in January. But, you know, going through a divorce, very, very painful one, because that man was not a bad man. He just wasn't. It was like having an awakening and really trying to make it work, and then it didn't. So the pain of loss is something that I've been through. I've also been through the pain of loss of miscarriages and losing parents and, you know, all the things that happens in life that in the past would have caused me to eat. But I developed these skills and these tools that we learn in this program that I never had to resort to that. It was, you know, it's a beautiful gift that we have. I think it was about after 5 to 7 years of abstinence was when I really kind of started to trust myself more with food and stopped weighing and measuring daily. And that was basically, as a deepening of trust in myself, as I mentioned before. Over the years and up till today, you know, there have been times, I think, you know, one of the things that I knew for sure coming into this program and when in the very beginning in my extremity, I thought it was all about perfection. Like, I really have to do this perfectly. And if I make any deviation whatsoever, if that was going to be a break of my abstinence and that I would be still somehow something terribly wrong and got to start over, you know, all of that stuff. And today I have a much more self-compassionate way of dealing with that and also of looking at it and dealing with it with the people that I sponsor. We have a phrase in our from the Big Book in our program that we strive for progress. not perfection. And that phrase to me is one of the cornerstones for living happy, joyous, and free from our food problems. So in practical application, this means that I strive to make the best food choices that I can each day, but I don't have to be perfect because perfection is not the goal. So the goal for me is to be mindful and conscious of my food choices. And if I find myself falling into some old pattern of thinking, it doesn't mean, and if the old pattern of thinking or old pattern, choosing to eat something that I know is not in my best interest, it doesn't mean that I'm somehow flawed or inadequate. It just is simply a balance barometer. It tells me that I need to look within to find out where and why I'm out of balance, because I learned in this program that it's all about something not balanced, it's either something emotional, something spiritual, or something physical. And it could be all three or two, it's not just one thing. So I have to constantly be aware of what I'm feeling and what I'm doing. So that's kind of where I have changed from extreme to serene. So, and I think it's important to have compassion for the complexity of our relationship with food. It's
time. Time is up.
Time. Okay. All right. Well, wonderful. Okay. Thank you so much, everyone. And I'm really looking forward to hearing what the other speakers have to say.
Thank you, Dee.
Wonderful. Thanks.
Okay, and that story you wrote for the first edition of the Lifeline was 1994, right? Okay, so we're doing great on time. Now we have 10 minutes. Before our break, we have 10 minutes of questions. Anyone have any questions in general or specifically to Dee after 10 minutes? Kathy, we'll time that, then we'll have a 5-minute break. Raise your hand if you'd like to ask a question. Let's see if we'll figure this out here. Either speak up, you could just unmute yourself and speak up if you have a question, or raise a hand. And if I, Judy?
Right.
Okay, unmute yourself.
Actually, that's something that I will have to do. And I asked you to unmute, Judy. Are you able to?
I'm unmuted now, I think.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Sorry, I just forgot. Because I was so excited. I loved what you had to say, everything about it. Yay. We've been probably attending the same meetings and reading the same books. I'm surprised we haven't connected sooner. Beautiful. I just wonder if you'd be willing to answer this question, but do you ever, now in your later recovery, do you ever have sugar or something that used to be send you off? And now when that happens, do you have reactions? Do you find a way to get balanced again? That's my question.
That's a great question. Thank you for asking it. So the answer is yes. Typically, I don't seek out to eat things that have sugar in them. But I'm not as rigid about it as I used to be. Like, for example, if I go to someone else's home and they have food there that I know has sugar in it, I don't refuse it anymore, and I'm very moderate with the portion. So I have found that I am not triggered by that as I thought that I would be or that I used to be. In a lot of ways, I feel that I have more balance because I eat a balance of foods that, it's not about only eating something with sugar in it. It's a whole balanced meal, and there may be some sugar in there. And usually it's not in large quantities, but yes, I have.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, I believe, Nancy, you have your hand raised.
My name is Nancy Beecham,
and I am a compulsive overeater. I have been abstaining in Overeaters Anonymous for 45 years and maintaining 150-pound weight loss. And welcome to the San Diego delegation. You're here in mass. I'm holding in my hand one of the first pieces of literature written by our founder in 1967, I believe, Hannah, if I'm correct. I put my hand in yours. And in it, she explained the program. And he asked the old timers who had 1 or 2 months or so at that time to please make sure this has never changed. And she defined abstinence. This is interesting. According to nature, food is necessary to sustain life. According to the compulsive overeater, food is necessary to face life. It follows that we can't say, okay, I'm going to abstain from compulsive overeating. We definitely need something more than that. And I thank you for laying out to all the newcomers that I know are here exactly what we need to do. It was beautifully done. My question is, I was ravaged by food. You know, I'm 79 now, a lot older than some of you. And I now am having congestive heart and liver problems. And I was 33 when I got here, but I had done that much damage. So for me, I would not consider having sugar or things like that, because why take the chance? You know, why would I take the chance when I live perfectly fine without it, you know, and have other things to substitute? But I'm wondering emotionally, food led me to do things that could put you in jail. In fact, I was in jail. They led me to shame my kids and my parents. And I'm wondering if you could talk a bit about changes emotionally where you've seen yourself, not people you sponsor or people away, but you've seen you become a woman of dignity, a better person. Would you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, wow. Thank you so much for that question. I love that. Woman of dignity. Yeah. Emotionally, when I came into OA, I had probably no self-esteem, not a lot of self-confidence. And really, I was embarrassed to be here. I felt that I didn't deserve to be on the planet. And that was why I walked around in shame all of the time. As I started to work on myself on the inside, the outside part of, you know, when I released the weight, I you know, obviously that gives us confidence and it gives us more self-esteem and self-worth. But that really wasn't the driver for me. The driver was the internal changes of becoming less, understanding that I do deserve to be here, and that I have something to contribute to the world. Being in OA really helped me with that, because it really showed me that it gave me a sense of purpose. One of the senses of purpose was that I could be of service to others, and that eventually I actually decided I want to go into a career of service. So I changed my career from being a chemist working in the lab behind a test tube all day and very isolated to becoming a nutritionist, so I could help not just people in program, but everyone. And really and truly, I mean, the way that I see myself today in the world, I am that woman of dignity. I have a lot of knowledge that I could share with the world. And I have a lot of the personal experience and compassion that I talked about earlier. And emotionally, that has, you know, I live in a daily state of gratitude as opposed to a daily state of shame. And that's the change.
Awesome. Let's see. We still have 5 more minutes. Who else would like to ask Dee a question? Let's see, I'm looking at a hand. Okay. Hannah. Hannah, sorry. Unmute yourself, Hannah.
Yes, I did. I'm Hannah, a compulsive overeater. Thank you, Dee. You touched on a lot of things that, you know, have happened to me during my life. My question to you is, have you had to give up? And being a nutritionist is even more interesting. I had this question before you said it. Did you ever have to give up a food that was actually, as you thought, perfect on your food plan, but it didn't get along with you physically?
Yes, actually, that's great. A great question. And actually, even think I've given up things just by choice, not necessarily because I found that medically it didn't agree with my body, but just because of what I learned about it and thought, maybe that's not best for me, even though it technically it was an okay food on my food plan. Mm-hmm. I have done that with certain foods. To me, giving up foods, it's just another surrender. Like I'm not attached to food in the way that I used to be before I came to OA. I have no attachment whatsoever. So if someone said to me, Dee, you need to give up Brussels sprouts now because maybe they're not the best for you, that would not be an issue for me. In the same way, it wouldn't be an issue if someone said you need to give up sugar. So they're to me, it's a similar release. It's like I don't have an opinion one way or the other, or an attachment one way or the other to a food. So yes, I have done that.
Okay, Monica.
You have 1 minute and 30 seconds left.
Okay, Monica.
Yes, honey, thank you. I would like for you, Dee, to talk a little bit about the trusting oneself in relation to the food. What I am discovering is that I have been changing somewhat my food because I don't trust that the 6 years that I've been abstinent are really real. I don't know if that makes sense to you. I have gone through many years with many different kinds of food and sponsors, from very rigid to very loose. And in the last 6 years, I have remained abstinent, but tweaking it. For example, no sugar, no sugar foods, anything that creates a lot of craving in me, I've gotten rid of. And gradually having gotten rid of that. And I realized just this week that I'm not trusting my abstinence. And so I want to go back to something that is very rigid because I think, oh, that's going to work better because everybody else does it. And I don't trust the fluidity that I've been able to maintain and to trust my body. So could you talk about that issue of trust when you mentioned it?
Monica, thank you so much for asking that, because in my experience, it's a very fine line with the trust. And if I ever feel that something is shaky for me, or it doesn't feel safe, or it's not working, then I have to go back to the basics of what I know works. Like, for example, I have gone back to weighing and measuring at times because mm-hmm. I know that's worked for me. It has always worked. And mm-hmm. so, and in fact, that weighing and measuring is a form of trust. Mm-hmm. And the trust really, the beginning of the trust was trusting in a higher power. Mm-hmm. And following what I asked my higher power, what is right for me, and listening to that, listening to the voice of my higher power, as I've developed over that, developed the trust, really what it is was that I started to feel that I was in sync and alignment with what my higher power's will is for me. And that's where the trust comes from. So I would just suggest that you look at that piece of it for yourself, you know, aligning yourself with your higher power's will and asking what that is for you. Mm-hmm.
That makes perfect sense to me.
Thank you. Thank you, Dee. Thank you, Dee, for all your share. Thank you, Monica, for that wonderful question. Thank you, everyone else, for all of your wonderful questions. At this point, we are going to have a timely 5-minute break. There is someone who did have a question from that last session, and we will resume after the 5-minute break with that question, and we'll move on from there. Okay?
Physically, the
probably one of the biggest challenges I've faced is the sagging skin. I released 100 pounds. So, and like I told you, I'm very short. So I have a lot of sagging skin, which seems to have gotten, like when I was younger, it seemed to not be so saggy for whatever reason. And it seems to be more now, or you know, at least more than it was. Some of that exercise has helped with that, but I think there's, you know, just some things. It's kind of like the rubber band. If you stretch it out too much, it's never going to go back to its original size. And so, you know, as I age, part of it is acceptance. Like in a lot of ways, I accept that extra skin as a sort of like the badge of honor for the battle that I won, I guess, over the obesity. But at the same time, sometimes I do long for a more taut body. But that's my biggest physical challenge. Other than that, I haven't had any. I have no physical health issues. In fact, I feel younger today probably than I felt when I was 30. And I can move my body easily. So, you know, I think that's the only thing.
Thank you. Thank you, Dee. That was a great question. Okay, I want to remind everyone again about our seven tradition and pass this virtual meeting before we resume and take a moment to remember this and to donate, please, at least $3 to the OARISE.org. Website is one way to do it. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. The expenses here are for the Zoom meeting subscription and the cost of the OA Rise website, the cost of extra storage so we can upload the OA Rise speaker meetings for you. Contributions in excess of our meeting expenses will go directly to the intergroup. Oopsie. Okay. So reminding you of the virtual basket, there's a couple of different ways you can donate. And I'm going to mention again before the meeting is over. Okay. At this point, we have our second speaker, someone who I would love to have more phone time with, and both of us can make more phone time for each other. Everybody's so busy. Okay. And her wonderful topic of trust. And here is Miss Judy.
Hi. Thank you, Rossi. Thank you for all you've done to put this together, and Kathy and Sherry and everybody. Really, really much appreciated. When Monica asked about trust and trusting herself and her recovery, that's exactly right on schedule, because that's what my topic is hopefully going to be. And I just want to hold up for you a t-shirt my friend gave me for my birthday last year. Trust the universe. And that speaks to a lot of how my spiritual program operates. And I even wrote a story about something that happened to me in New York this summer, where this t-shirt was involved and trusting the universe was involved. And if you want it, just email me, judyhollis@aol.com, and I will send you a copy of the little story. Send me your email anyway. I'll send you a lot of stuff. I have another story an audio recording that I'll send to you about speaking truth to power. On and on. Anyway, I'm Judy. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater. My statistics are that I've been in Overeaters Anonymous 46 years. In November 22nd of this year, I will be celebrating 47 years of surrender to my sustenance. I call it my sustenance, not my abstinence. And hopefully when we go into having more of these meetings, we can discuss that word abstinence, which I've always hated in OA. Some of the things I'm trying to write about, the similarities and differences between OA and AA. When OA turned 21 years old, 1981, I was the keynote speaker at the Saturday night big shot meeting, blah, blah. And one of the things I said then is, you know, we are now adults. We are 21 years old. It is time for us as a program to take what we learned from our daddy. That's what children do. And then we see what works in our own lives and we adapt daddy's ethics and ethos to our own experience. And people really didn't like that. What a quote here, the big book, quote there, the big, yeah. And I don't think we've accomplished it. I think we have not grown up as a program, but I'm still here and I'm not going anywhere. I'm afraid all the time that you want to kick me out of this program. But, you know, the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop eating compulsively. So I don't know how you can get me out unless you change those rules. Yada, yada. Anyway, about 2 years before I even thought about this program, my husband and I were walking past a bakery in Redondo Beach, California, on the pier, the Redondo Pier, and we lived very close by. And I looked in the bakery window and I said, you know, Howard, I wish I could just have one of everything in there like everybody else. He was a practicing daily drinking alcoholic who beat me periodically, a nice guy who had a terrible disease who he eventually died of. But he looked at me at that moment and he said, Jude, not everybody would want to eat one of everything in there. And I said, really? You know, I just couldn't believe that if you had the option, why wouldn't you want one of everything? And I, at that time, was a just finishing up my master's degree in rehabilitation counseling and working on my hours to get state license as a marriage and family counselor. I was an alcoholism counselor. I knew everything about addiction. And I was dieting my way up to 222 pounds. So all the brilliance and all the knowledge we get in here, our computer is broken. So I saw that somebody's going to take notes. Please send me your notes. Please take a picture, email them to me. I love to hear what people found was important. But this is a spiritual program and it's a surrender. And I got to tell you, with all my brilliance, that did not help me one single bit. It walked me right into these rooms. And I think that's true for most of us. We have nutritionists, we have doctors, we have lawyers, we have airplane pilots in this meeting. All of that competence did not help us. Anyway, don't let me get started. The thing I learned here when I finally got here, and interesting, you were close to 30, Dee, in your wonderful share, and so was I. And I said, somehow the next 30 have to be different. Whatever it takes, NMW, no matter what, I cannot keep doing this over and over and over. So I surrendered. They taught me things like it's complicated and it's nuanced. And that's what I'm hearing just in our brief time here this morning. You know, there's no black and white right and wrong about this thing. And it's a daily reprieve based on our fit spiritual condition. Trust me, I never would have said these things. When I first got here, I hated two G words, God and gratitude, God and gratitude. And I told this lady, Jocelyn, working the literature table, I said, I can't take all this God talk. And she said, well, it might help for you what worked for me. And that is that the Quakers say God is the still small voice within. And maybe you can try to spend some time going within and consulting with that higher authority. Didn't mean I was God. It meant I was channeling more than my little brain could dream up. And I've had many experiences throughout these 46 years where my brain said, turn left. And my body, being surrendered, went, whoa, no, gotta turn right. There's a different messenger. There's someone else in charge.
get out of the driver's seat, slow down, listen. And I now have on my gratitude shrine outside, I have this empty cup that I got in Thailand. And it's one of the things that I pray in gratitude to keep myself empty, to listen and learn for this cup to be filled. And that's why I so value this kind of a discussion where we can all keep, you know, the other thing that was taught to me early on, yes, it was complicated and it was like a revolving Hollywood sign light that it was physical, emotional, and spiritual, but you never knew which one you were supposed to work on at the right time. The light would move. How do you know? You have to trust also what's happening on a daily basis in your life. You might have to work more on your physical than your emotional, et cetera. But they also said that it's a slow and painful recovery. I thought I was going to be here for 6 months and be a prom queen and leave. And even at the 2-year mark, when I got into terrible depression and I went to see a therapist who happened to have been my my professor in graduate school. And the first session, he said to me, you know, you're going to be a long-term patient. What? Long-term? I'm a therapist myself. I've done a lot of work already. What? So as it turns out, I stayed with him for the next 22 years in my recovery and only left that therapist when the messages from him and my sponsor were different. And I said, I'm sorry, I got to go with my sponsor. Interesting. Sometimes he would want to argue with me about whether compulsive overeating was a disease. And I said, you know what? I said, if you want to argue, it's got to be on your dime because I'm convinced on this one and I'm not going to pay you to convince you. So anyway, you know, my first sponsor gave me, first of all, there were no gurus in those days. You know, we were all kind of huddled together like little gerbils. And we said, well, I'm trying this. You know, I was the literature chairman. So I did go up to Roseanne's house and ran that mimeograph machine to run off the gray sheet, the blue sheet, or the orange sheet. And I was on gray sheet because that was the most rigid. And they said, we don't know. We're trying this. This might work for you. That might work for you. But it was a daily reprieve based on your fit spiritual condition. And my first sponsor gave me a plaque of Desiderata, which you can look up on the internet. And a line in there is, beyond a wholesome discipline, be gentle with yourself. And it was a much more gentle program.
10 minutes.
5 minutes?
10 minutes.
Later. 10. Oh, my God. Okay. Well, I'm going to go fast. Forget all that stuff. Anyway, so you can hear all the diet tricks that you hear in any other program or Women's Day magazine, but try to go with what works. Oh, God, I couldn't believe that time went so fast. So I'd been in the program about 8 months and lost 60 pounds, and it was going to be a pool party. And I screeched into Macy's to buy a bathing suit. They were having a sale. And I grabbed this bathing suit off of a dark corner table, didn't try it on, raced home, tried it on, baby oil all over me, got baby oil all over the bathing suit. Plus, all these bulges were hanging out. I don't want this bathing suit. Go back to Macy's. And while I'm planning how I'm going to return it, I'm thinking, I'm going to tell her there was all this oil on it that we couldn't see because it was on a dark table. And I start working my con. Din, 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 what I'm going to tell, what she's going to say, blah, 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 blah. How I'm going to get away with something because my t-shirt used to read, nobody got the best of her. Bottom line, of course, it always showed up on my hips. But anyway, I'm sitting in the parking lot at Macy's. And my body goes, and I'm sweating. I said, I can't do this. I can't go lie to this lady. I turned around and I went home. The bathing suit was a size 14
and it cost $14. And I said, my recovery is worth $14. But a bigger thing had happened is I had lost my con. They told me, oh, no, you don't have to change. Just hang out here. We're all in fellowship. Want a hug? Guess what? Everything changes. Every single thing. So I could no longer pull off the same kind of BS that I used to. What a gift. But I had to start trusting other voices that would vibrate through my body. So for many years on after that, I continued to want my body to be a vibrating vessel that could channel my particular messages. The byproduct would be I would lose weight. The byproduct would be I would be healthy. But I really came seeking guidance. So things began to change beautifully, drastically. Like I say, my husband died. I became a workaholic. I dedicated myself and my life and everything to developing the nation's first eating disorder unit. It was an opportunity that just came by accident because my sponsor said, you got to give up some of your work. You're working too much. So I did. So this came in. Nothing I planned for. And years after that, this jealous psychiatrist stole it from me. I was devastated. I said, it's the end of the world. You know, they had a phrase in those days. They said, just when the caterpillar thinks it's the end of the world, they become a butterfly. And that's kind of what happened. I got fired. I lost everything. My baby snatched from my arms. Next intended step, go home, finish your PhD dissertation. I wrote it, developed it for a popular audience. It became a bestseller. All over the Oprah 3 times, television for years, talking this message of overeating as a disease and how this kind of recovery that worked for alcoholics could work for us, blah, blah, blah. It was wonderful. It was great. I had a great, great time. Beyond my wildest dreams, I never envision that for myself. And I've since become a writer, taken more classes, written more books. You know, it's about getting on the horse in the direction it's riding. Ride the horse in the direction you're supposed to go, or else don't complain that you have a saddle horn up your backside, you know? But finding that out takes a lot of work. You have to weather loss, like losing men, losing jobs, losing houses, losing career. I almost lost my house on that one. But I was willing to behave honestly. And in the early days, just like, you know, what was mentioned earlier about weighing and measuring and calling in, and it was all about staying visible.
5 minutes.
Thank you, dear. Was staying open to other people seeing you. And I would rather tell you anything than what's in my plate. Anything. But no, keep it visible on a daily basis. Share with another person. Good, bad, or indifferent. So I started doing retreats for OA. I had a lot of wonderful things and a lot of problems with that, these 3-day things that I do all over the country. And because I had this television presence, there were a lot of people coming to see the television guru to talk at the OA thing. And I said, that's not who comes here. I come here as a fellow sufferer to heal myself, to lose my big backside. I'm not coming here with that hat on. But a lot of people, anyway, a lot of difficulties. But at the same time, I think I started becoming or experimenting with being more flexible with my food, as was already mentioned. And I wanted to talk about it there. I wanted to find sisters who would say, yeah, maybe, what do you think? Everything breaks down to sugar in the system anyway, la-da-da-da-da. I got scared. Oh, God, are we trying to talk ourselves into something? Is, you know, the demon, my ravenous animal trying to take over? And when I shared it with the people at the Chicago retreat, they all got mad at me. They said, "Are you trying to say alcoholics can drink?" I said, "No, no. I just want to have a discussion with others of us in OA to look at possibilities, what works and what doesn't." The big book says we will be in a position of neutrality. We'll neither be drawn toward it nor repulsed from it. And that was happening for me. Like has been mentioned, it was not such a big deal. I was wearing my recovery like a loose garment. My food was in the kitchen, not in every moment of my life. And I withdrew from OA. I got scared and I got sad. I also always believed that OA, and I trusted myself and my instincts. I trusted the messages in this body. And I always loved OA so much because it seemed like no matter what was going on out in the world, OA was a place where people were being honest. It felt like such a refuge for me that we would sit down and be honest instead of performing, instead of impressing. And things happened in OA. Two groups started in a schism. There were two guys. There were mostly women in OA. But there was Fred S. had the HOW programs, rigid, rigid, food, food. And then Bill B. had the Going Sane program, where he said, don't even worry about your food. Just work the steps and it'll happen to you. And so people were fighting about this all over the country. I remember once I went to one of Bill B.'s meetings and a lady said, I eat when I'm hungry and I stop when I'm full. I hated her. How could she say that when I, you know, I can't ever eat to full, God darn it. You know, but I remember that. I also remembered I was scared to speak there once and they asked me to speak and I was nervous for weeks before. And I finally spoke and this lady came up to me after. She said, "Oh, I so loved what you had to say. Blah, blah, blah." She said, "And especially, I believe anyone who can wear those 5-inch heels is my kind of woman."
1 minute, Judy.
So you see, you don't know what's going to impress people. You don't know anything. I speak to hear my own echo. So I just want to share with you, because I got 1 minute, about this thing that I just came up with in preparing for this today. I don't like the word abstinence, but I do like the word sustenance. And if you take all the different definitions, it comes up for me with this kind of thing. Sustenance is a means of support that sustains or comforts, giving strength and nourishment, allowing you to continue to be alive. So I'm here to learn how to live my intended life, not yours, but mine. And that path is given to me. It's not something that I do. It is something that I am available for if I keep my cup empty. So I'm not going anywhere, and I hope you guys aren't either. Oh, quickly, quickly. An African village where when a woman is pregnant, she goes out and women surround her and they all start humming and they come with a song for that particular child. And when the child is born, they sing that song. And every life stage, they sing that song to that child. Going to school, adulthood, getting married, and on their deathbed, they sing that person their individual song. Only one other time, if that person gets into trouble, if they do something deviant, if they commit a crime, if they're behaving badly, the village gathers and sings them their song so they can remember who they are and who they're supposed to be. And you've given that to me. And I trust it. I listen. And I'm still hanging out. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Judy. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I know you're open to 10 minutes of questions.
Sure.
Let's see. I do have a hand here. It is Wendy.
Hi, Wendy, compulsive overeater from San Diego. I was so excited about hearing Judy. I go to some meetings that she attends and sustenance, it makes sense to me. It really, really does. I have a question. Abstinence is abstaining from compulsive food behaviors or compulsively eating while working towards or maintaining a healthy weight. My question is there anything in any of the OA literatures that says, no, you cannot eat flour, you cannot eat sugar, you cannot do this? I have not found it. And I have a food plan that I made from Superfoods RX. I love it. I will eat this for the rest of my life. I do eat flour. I binged because I thought I could never have sugar. And I have found over the years, yes, I can have a dessert now and then. I can have that. And because I know I can have it, I usually don't. But I don't, for me, if I couldn't have any of these foods, I mean, what? It wouldn't be real fun. And I just, you know, I've made a plan. It works for me. If I get too large, I take things out. If I get too small, I add things. And I just wondered, is there something in OA literature that says no, never sugar? Thank you.
Yeah, I don't really know the answer to that. I know there are a lot of suggested food plans. I know that my friend a friend of mine who passed away, he used to always talk about recreational sugars. And I do think taking the AA model, we don't want to eat in a way to drown our emotions. We don't want to eat for those reasons. We want to eat for sustenance. So I don't really have an answer. I'm not really a literature maven. There are a lot of others here who are. So they'll probably speak to you on that. Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you. Thank you, Judy. Yes, maybe someone else will have input on that. That's an interesting question. I could pursue that too. But at this point, let's move on with questions of Marion.
Yeah, we can bring those up at the end again.
Sure.
Yeah.
Marion, unmute yourself.
Trying. Okay, there I am. thank you so much, Judy. My name's Marion. I'm from Silver Spring, Maryland, and I've been in OA for over 40 years. I'm not asking this question in an antagonistic way. I was curious about what you had to say that the OA program hadn't grown up with regard to our parent AA organization. So I just wondered if you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Actually, thank you. I'm writing a book about it. So I can't possibly speak to it at all, except to say, as I told you, they got us into sibling rivalry, fighting with each other about what are you eating? What are you eating? What are you eating? Looking at each other's plates instead of food is just one of the tools. What we do with food is one of the ways we prepare ourselves for this gift, for this state of grace that will channel through us. And that's, I think, the same message as AA. But AA can just plug the jug and go to meetings. We have to make friends with our substance, and we have to plan for it, and we have to think about it. And I believe that's a blessing, because I've had to learn how to savor and suck my food and enjoy my eating, honey. And I think that's fine. So I can't answer it, but Marion, let's talk. You'll help me. You'll help me write the book.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. I know we have a lot of hands raised, but I think we have time for one more, but everyone else who has a question, remember, we're going to have more time at the end for more questions, okay? So, Kathy, we have time.
Email me, too.
That's true.
We have 5 minutes and 32 seconds.
Okay. Well, I see that it's 4. All right, because we ran over a little bit because of 7 tradition. Okay, so let's see. What we have Nancy, correct? Nancy J. Unmute yourself.
Oh, okay. Hi, thank you so much for your wonderful talk. I'm 76 years old, and I've been around since those early days of Bill B and Fred and all of that. I came into OA when I was 30 years old, and I'm maintaining 105-pound weight loss now, very grateful. And I want to ask you, Judy, what is your OA program like now? Can you give us just a little bit of an idea of what how you're working your program?
Well, every morning I go out to my gratitude shrine and I express gratitude for wonderful traits that have been given me, wonderful experiences in my life. And then I kind of go, I give it up to the universe. At this point, you know, my husband had COVID this year, plus a lot of other medical things, and I've been struggling with a lot and driven me to 2 and 3 meetings a day on Zoom, not every day, but at least 3 to 5 meetings a week. I've been studying the big book now for 2 years with a guy out of Missouri. If you email me, I'll send you his stuff. He's fabulous. So I think it's more than enough. I still have the same general idea about how I'm going to eat every day. I would say, you know, 95% of the time, I am almost in a weight loss kind of an eating plan. I don't need to do that anymore. And every once in a while, there's a deviation and I come back to the center of the road. It's like, you know, when you're first learning to drive, you go, and you finally learn to get down the center of the road and just make slight corrections, slight adjustment. And that's been working for me. I'm maintaining an 80-pound weight loss, and I have a good muscular body and great sex at this age. So what else do you want?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Lady Vivian!
Okay, yes, we have time for one more, Kathy, because we're going to keep on. Then remember, everyone, keep your questions for the end.
We have 2 minutes and 49 seconds.
Okay, about 3 minutes for question and answer, Vivian and Judy.
Thank you, Rosie. Thank you, Judy, for your share today. I've been inspired by you because your recovery makes me feel okay about exploration and adventure and getting out of the box with what I think I, you know, and to really experience it and not be afraid. I think the talk really is about how do we trust enough to deal with the exploration and adventure of what God really wants for us? Period. Question mark.
Yes, ma'am. I don't know what the question is. I'm with you. I agree. It is scary, and I'm not recommending anything like I'm saying to newcomers. Mm-hmm. For 20 years, I sent postcards to my sponsor from Bali for a month, telling her what I ate. I took my own food to people's houses. I asked the waitress, "What's in that salad dressing?" I mean, I was a nutcase. So I understand the rigidity and I understand how scary it is. And I do not recommend it for newcomers. You know, try for 2 to 20 years doing rigid and then we'll talk. And the minute you have a slip off the rigid, just call your sponsor, tell her and get back on the horse. Nothing more. We eat because we're compulsive overeaters. That's why there's no great psychological mystery.
Thank you. Awesome. Terrific. Okay. Thank you. There were 3 more people. We're gonna call on you at the end. We're gonna call on Sonia, Christina, and Teresa at the end for more time for questions. At this point, we have our third speaker, Miss Hannah, and you have your wonderful topic, and you're going to share with us for 20 minutes. And Hannah is, I know that she's known a lot. She's been an OA intergroup a lot and is of the California sect, but she is my new friend. And please Hannah, share your topic and your 20 minutes. Please help me welcome Hannah.
Thank you, everybody. My name is Hannah. I'm a compulsive overeater. I have been in this program 44 years and I've abstained for almost all of it. I came in 1977 and I was so self-assured of myself that I went right on this gray sheet and I was doing this perfectly. And I was on this pink cloud. I do not recommend that because when you sit on a pink cloud, you're bound to fall off. And I did after 3 months because I was very critical of other people who didn't do it my way. We had gray sheet when I came and Judy talked about it. And the only thing I never did was because I was very smart when I came. And today I'm not that smart. I'm still learning. And that's a big difference. My life was a mess when I was very smart. But I saw, you know, I still have that little old gray sheet. I call it my insurance policy. Every once in a while, I look at it. But at the bottom, it says, please discuss this with a nutritionist, dietitian, or your doctor. Those things did not apply to me because, as I said, I was very, very smart. But when I grew up in Germany. That was a long time ago. When you look at my email, you can see 1939. So, you know, I'm 82 years old, which makes me the oldest one in the group. And I'm still here and I'm still kicking. But before program, and I just want to say when before program, my life was so terrible. I was married to an alcoholic. They're very charming when you meet them. But, you know, as they progress, they're not that charming anymore. But I had somebody blamed for all this stuff. And the only thing I could do was eat over it. But when I came to program, I really was not convinced that I was a compulsive overeater. I just wanted to lose weight one more time because that's when things will be perfect. And I tried it over and over again. So I'm jumping back and forth, but the fear and dishonesty. My sponsor had to remind me that, you know, we have some steps and you don't just, I knew the steps because I went with my husband who found this program before I did, to meetings, and I knew the steps. And she kind of reminded me after I fell flat on my face that you work the steps. It's not enough to know the steps. And she was wonderful. And she was my sponsor for over 30 years until she passed away. But I was so rigid that the first temptation, when something came along, I fell flat on my face. And the only thing I did right, and I'm one of these people, I never did anything over again. If I went on a diet, it wasn't any good. I would move on and find something else. And that's the first time in my life that I picked up this 1,000-pound phone and I called a person that I kind of liked that I talked to, and she became my sponsor, and they talked me into coming back. So I was only out there for 10 days. But I learned the lesson that the misery will be refunded instantly. And I learned very, very slowly. And I feel that the first 5 years of my program were my apprenticeship. And I learned slowly but surely because I'm very resistant. I'm very stubborn. But going back to how I came about, it was, as I said, I grew up in Germany and I was always full of fear. But I always tried to project that I was this perfect person. And I always knew that if I would be someplace else, it would be better. You heard of geographicals, and mine took me practically around the world. I mean, from Germany to Canada to California, and every place I went, the people didn't change. I mean, you know, they were just as bad as they were when I grew up. And I did not find out until program that I have to take my eyes off of you, off of my husband, and just look at myself, and maybe I need to change. And I didn't know that. And everything I know today, I learned in program from this wonderful sponsor. And I still, to this day, I follow a food plan. Now it's changed tremendously, but I follow it and I still record my food. I have this little thing where I write it down every day. I don't do it when I travel. And I always, when I grew up, I was so full of fear and I was always living in a dream world, never in reality. And I always felt, you know, I once dreamt about places like Mount Everest and, you know, all these different places. I was always living in fantasy world. And when I came to program, reality set in. Now, I didn't have anything. My husband had his expensive hobby. I had mine. But, you know, when we came to program, things started to change. So eventually I was able to do some of the things that I always dreamed about. And I'm very grateful for that. But the interesting part is I heard about the steps when I went once in a while with my husband, who found his program 6 years before I found mine. And I always thought, gosh, you know, that's such a wonderful program. If I were an alcoholic, I quit drinking while I was eating all their donuts that they have there. But nobody ever saw me eat one because, you know, it's a secret. I think my disease is more of a secret disease because we're not out there. I was always hiding and I was trying to fool people. You know, I never got back bigger than a size 12 and my top weight was close to 200 pounds. But, you know, I used to make my own clothes. And first of all, I couldn't afford to buy any. You know, we didn't have anything. We had expensive hobbies. So I never got bigger than a size 12, but you can cut an inch or two or three on either side. And you're always a size 12. Now, who did I fool? Me, nobody else. But it was so important for me to, you know, make these statements. And the other thing I had a big problem with was if somebody would pay me a compliment, and I hope you are better at that. But before program, if somebody said, you know, that looks kind of nice, and I would either say, well, you know, I got it at a thrift shop, and it might have been so. But a person does not pay me a compliment because they want to make me feel bad. I made them feel bad by saying, well, I got it at a thrift shop and it wasn't worth anything. And, you know, today the difference is today if somebody says, oh, God, that looks nice on you. That's a nice top. And I start laughing about it and I say, thank you. I love it. And, you know, I got a great deal and I'm so happy about that. The tone makes the music and the attitude. And I never knew that. I never knew how to smile. And I know they have my picture there, one before, and I wasn't at my top weight. This was not too long after I got married and I only gained about 30 pounds. So over the years, I worked my way up. But, and today I like to make fun of everything, especially myself, because I like to laugh about myself. And my husband was always kidding me. He was always accusing me of sitting on my sense of humor. And today I laugh no matter what. And, you know, and as I get older, things happen to me. And when I turned 80, I always make fun of it. I say, you know, I should have stayed at the age of 80. I'm glad I'm 82, but I should have stayed there because I had no health problems. Well, then I accumulated health problems. One of them was leukemia. The other one was a thyroid condition. And now just lately, they diagnosed me with neuropathy. And instead of feeling sorry for myself, I had to walk with a cane for a while. I was showing off my beautiful purple cane, you know, and said, hey, isn't this beautiful? And I said, but it's temporary and it's ending up in a corner. And the last 2 weeks, I didn't have to walk with it. Now, without program, I always felt sorry for myself because, you know, if you had such a difficult life as I had, you would do the things that I did too. And, you know, when I came to program, as I said, I was gung-ho, but it was the last house on the block, I feel, today. And I believe that. And I'm grateful I came back and my sponsor explained things to me and I changed things. And I want to talk, you know, I want to tell you a little story about insecurity and feeling terrible and feeling imperfect. There was one little incident that I had before program and after program, and I call it my coffee story, and I told Rossi about it. We lived in Canada at the time, and we went up north to visit with some friends whose parents lived up there, and they invited us for coffee and, of course, a lot of other stuff, cake, right? And I had a ball. I had a wonderful time because it was before program. But then a disaster happened to this perfect person. I spilled coffee on the white tablecloth, and I wanted the floor to open up. I wanted to sink in because now you knew I wasn't perfect, and a perfect person doesn't do this. And the interesting part is that my coffee story after program, I was in program about 25 years, and I was asked to speak, and I was already living out here. We used to live in the big city, Los Angeles, when we worked, and then we came to Palm Springs, you know, to get away from all the big city stuff. And I was asked to speak. And my thing is I always get to meetings early. So I was there about half an hour early because it was quite a way that I had to drive. And I thought, oh, I'll get myself a cup of coffee. And those are the days before we had coffee cup holders in our cars. So I put the coffee on the divider, you know, seat divider. I had a kind of a sporty car. And then I sat down. And guess what the coffee cup did? It tipped over and it went right on my seat, and they were leather seats. And it was pretty hot. So I jumped out. But what I did, instead of feeling so terrible, I started to laugh. And I had a white pantsuit on, white top and white pants. And I stood there and laughed like an idiot. But then when my, you know, common sense set in, I said, you know, you're supposed to be at that meeting in 15 minutes. Do you really want to show up with that big spot on your rear end? And so I thought, okay, there's a cheap clothing store. So I charged over there and I found a pair of pants and I put it on. But now comes the clincher to the story. I got to the meeting, and when I started to talk, the first thing I did was I told them about my coffee story and all this crazy stuff that happened, and everybody laughed. And laughter is such a wonderful medicine. I'm not sitting on my sense of humor anymore. I am waking up in the morning, and I say, it's a great day, no matter where I am with health or anything else. And I know 44 years ago, before I came, I used to get up in the morning and I would say, oh my God, I may have another 40 years left. And it was very sad. And today I don't jump out of bed anymore because I have a couple of problems. So I roll out of bed and I say, oh my God, I'm 82 years old and I hope I have a few years left. Again, the tone makes the music. And, you know, certain things I swore I would never do. I came to this program and I heard God and some other people talked about it. That wasn't for me. And praying, that wasn't for me. Spirituality, oh, no way. And meditation, forget it. And I was, you know, I resisted that. As I said, the first 5 years, it was my apprenticeship. And guess what I do now and have done for a long time? I get on my knees first thing in the morning when I came a little, you know, when I got it a little faster, now a little slower. And I keep it simple. I know, I believe that God gives me intuitions about situations that come my way. And that's what I believe is the message from my higher power. But I get on my knees and I keep it very simple. I only ask my higher power, that's God today. And I say, please give me the willingness to take and accept what comes my way today. Help me and give me the strength to have good, clean, healthy. I didn't say healthy when I first came, abstinence, because, you know, it's important when you get to be my age. And please help me treat others the way I would like to be treated. And I keep it as simple as that. This is something that never dawned on me, but it goes back to this great sponsor that I had for so many years. And we talked about that. And I keep it simple and I try to remember, but it gives me a good start every day. And I always thought I was an honest person and I never really stole anything. I mean, for one thing, I was too afraid to do any of that. But I did steal my sister's candy, like, you know, Christmas came around or other birthdays or whatever. And I would never admit to it. And my parents would tell her off. She's 12 years younger, so she was a tiny little kid and she got told off. And I would never say a word. Now, that is dishonesty. And, you know, as Rossi said, fear and dishonesty. And I was afraid of so many things. I was afraid to drive on the freeway. I was afraid to fly. As long as I had the food, you know, and because I wasn't interested in drinking, it was okay. But the first time when I did that, I had to say, okay, God, now let's get on the freeway. Up one ramp, down the other. And I thought, oh my God, I did it. This program has given me a lot of strength to do things that I used to be afraid of. Well, the first time when I got on a plane after I was in program and I actually did something, I hope nobody saw me, but if they did, they probably wondered what this crazy broad was all about. I'd knocked three times on the outside before I marched in and I said, okay, God, here we go. Now you got me. Now I still say the serenity prayer when I travel, but I've had all kinds of crazy things happen during my trips. I flew in a blizzard in a small plane, you know, up in Alaska. And I had fun. And people said, oh, my God, weren't you terrified? I said, no, it's one day at a time. How do I know tomorrow we don't have the big earthquake in California and things might happen? And I know one of our speakers, you know, Janice, she had a lot of problems in her area with nature. And we never know what's going to happen from one day to the next. In this program, my higher power and all the people in it have shown me that I can live one day at a time. And I was either living in the past or worrying about the, you know, the future. And if I was going on a trip, I would pack the suitcase 3-4 weeks before. Now, I know I'm going on a trip because I'm going to visit my sister towards the end of the year. 3 days or four, I think about it. And most of the time it is, now, do I have all the medication that I need? Because those are the important thing. The rest is not important. And I've always loved to see people. I love people and I still love people more than I love the Zoom conference. Let's face it. That's my truth. And I'm looking forward to seeing them again. And I'm a convention junkie. That's where I first saw Janice. And then later on, I also met her again at World Service. And that was a wonderful convention. I just loved it. I loved it so much. I stayed a week and investigated, you know, what's going on around there. And I'm grateful for everything that has happened to me. And I am grateful that I have had such a wonderful life. I talked about my health. We're getting older, but laughing about it. I can even make the doctors laugh. You know, I get to the doctor, the first thing, are you depressed? And I will say, no, I'm not depressed. I said, I refuse to get depressed, but if this keeps going for another 6 months, I'd probably get there. And then the doctors laugh. 25 years ago, I had this wonderful husband who also was my best friend after we both had the program. He passed away at a quite a young age. And that was like a devastating blow to me. But this program helped me work through it. I had friends, I had a sponsor, and they were, you know, pulling me out of the house to go to a meeting. Or they would come over when I was taking care of my husband, which I did at home, and kept me company and kind of helped me save my sanity. But after my husband passed away, I thought my life was over. Now what? And you know what? Program is there. And I could do a lot of things in program. I actually dove into service. And I've been giving service ever since. And then a couple of years ago, no, actually, it was just this last year, due to health reasons, I had to cut way back. And that's okay, too. But program gets me through everything. It gets me through life. And I was not prepared for life when I came to this program. And today, every day, I think I am, because I get up and I turn my will and my life over and say, okay, God, here we go. And wanting to know if I made the right decision, I talked about the intuition. And that is something that I've also learned from my sponsor. If something feels good when I have to make a decision, when something comes my way, it must be right. If it doesn't feel quite good, well, and that's that intuition from God. Maybe I should put it aside and wait a couple of days, and then I can talk it over with OA friends, or maybe all by itself, all of a sudden the peace sets in and I know it's the right thing or it's not the right thing. But I never knew that. I mean, it's like, you know, I say I was this perfect person when I came to program, and today I'm learning every day. And I love to go to meetings. I love the people in it. And, you know, if it hadn't been for this program and the people in it, I could have missed it all. And I am so grateful that I'm still here. So thank you for asking me. And it's all wonderful to see you all. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Hannah. And now you are open for 10 minutes of questions. For Hannah. So
did they ever show my picture before and after? I guess
I didn't get that. Maybe Sherry, or I'm sorry, Kathy can do a screen share.
That was that beautiful me. Did you look at my face? Isn't, and I wasn't even at my top weight. Sheer misery, right? And I think you have on after.
We have, yes, we do. Okay. Yes.
And there that you was go. A few years ago. And now I think everything is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate life every day, one day at a time. Thank you.
Thank you, Hannah. Okay, anyone? Let's see. There's no hands. Speak up to ask Hannah a question. Okay, here we go. Kathy.
Would you tell me again the prayer you say in the morning? I like that.
Okay, I just say, good morning, God. And I also say good morning to my husband, you know, his name that I called him all the time. And thank you for another day. And please give me the courage to accept what comes my way today. I have today after everything. And please give me the willingness and the strength to have good, clean, healthy abstinence today. And help me to treat others the way I would like to be treated. And I made that up all by myself. I didn't need it anywhere.
Thank you. And you're beautiful for 89. You're 79. Well, whatever you are, you're.
I'm 82. I'm 82. And when I say that, a lot of times people say, really? I don't believe. And I say, no, I'm 39. I lie about my age. And then everybody laughs again. You see, you have to make them laugh.
I'm impressed.
Okay. Next is, we have two more. Nancy B.
Nancy,
unmute yourself. You have a question?
My name is Nancy Beecham. I'm a compulsive overeater. Surprise, Hannah. I've come to treasure your friendship and your knowledge, and I thank you on behalf of Region 2
and Overeaters Anonymous for all you've done to help so many of us with the traditions and the principles. And I wanted to ask if you might just quickly mention a little about your story and the devastation you came from, so the perspectives can be really gotten by this audience and this tape about when you were a little child and what happened.
Oh, you mean when I grew up? Okay. Yes, it was my unfortunate part that I was born 3 months before the Second World War started. So, of course, things weren't too good, you know, right in the middle of Germany. And, of course, I was very small. I didn't know a lot of things that were going on. But I did see things and I experienced things that a lot of young children should not experience. But there was also a funny experience. When this was over, I had malnutrition like all the other little kids. And so, you know, thank God for the United States, the Quakers and stuff, that they wanted to pep us back to health. And we had to line up and we had to swallow a big spoon of cod liver oil. Now, if any of you had ever had to do that, it tastes pretty awful. But I thought, well, you know, if you can swallow it, it can't be too bad. But then as soon as I had that and everybody else was screaming, they gave me the first piece of chocolate that I had ever tasted. I was 5 years old. It wasn't any bigger than my thumbnail. And I thought I was in 7-7. And all the other little guys, they ran away and swore they would never come back. And you know what I did? I went to the back of the row. I was willing to swallow another spoon of cod liver oil in order to get another piece of chocolate. So now you know why chocolate was my binge food. And that's the one thing I can't have.
I had a second part to the question, if it's okay. My question is, you and I do a lot of the same things. You know, I've been here, you have 44, I have 45 years. And we do a lot of service and we do a lot of getting on our knees and saying the first three steps and reading the doctor's opinion on a daily basis, I believe. But I wondered if you might just embellish a little bit, because somebody was talking about foods that we eat and abstinence and what it says in the literature. And I believe that a lot of the literature for us talks about us getting healthy and putting into our body and behaving in a manner that's what all our traditions are about, behaving in a manner that puts into the universe what's going to nurture us and nurture our families, nurture the world. And could you talk a drop about the traditions and the principles?
Okay. And you know, we have this new wonderful pamphlet that was combined, A New Plan of Eating. And they actually mentioned all kinds of fruits in there. We've never done that before. And I think it's great because I learned from people when they said they were in a situation, but they didn't have to eat. Or if they said what they did with food, oh my God, they did that. And I never wanted anybody to know that, you know, like I've never eaten out of a trash can, but close to it. If it fell on the floor, it was still edible. Those are the things. But traditions are very, very important to me because I think that that's what holds us together. And I know they get broken every once in a while. And while I was working, you know, for Region 2, I mean, and people want to change the steps and all. Now, I had problems with all that when I came. But I had this personal physical therapist at home, my husband, who used to pat me on the head. And he'd say, just keep going to meetings and you learn. And I've learned that it's okay the way it is. There, to me today, there's a God and there's the food plan. And there's certain things I have to change with my food, especially the last year, because, you know, cancer wants to make your weight go down. And then I had the thyroid condition that wants to make your weight go up. So I have to balance it. And I had to get used to it and listen to a doctor that I had to add certain things. And as somebody else said, he didn't say, you know, add chocolate to it or add sugar or cook donuts or everything. He didn't say that. But he told me that you have to eat certain things in order to keep your weight up. Now, if you told me that at 200 pounds, that would have been 7'7". Nobody ever did. But at my weight, I'm 5'3", and I'm getting close to 100 pounds. So I really have to watch it. So I'm open to suggestions. And when I asked earlier about the cheese, this is a quick story. I had migraines, tremendous migraines. And my food on gray sheet was when I came, 2 ounces of cheddar cheese and an apple. That was lunch. And I was wondering why I had all these migraines. And they put me on medication. And after that, when I went to the doctor and I said, is there anything else I can do? And he said, it works, doesn't it? And I thought in my head, you jerk, now I'm going to investigate. And I investigated and I found out there's a chemical in my favorite cheese, which was cheddar cheese, that caused the migraines. And today I'm very involved in my health. And the doctors always pay me compliments, said, hey, you're really involved. I get on the floor every morning for an hour and do my yoga exercises because I get out of bed, I can hardly move. And afterwards, after I do that, I can run a mile a minute. No, I'm not quite that far, but I can walk again. And I'm willing to do all that. But before a program, I would have sat in my rocking chair and eaten all the stuff that was supposed to make me feel better.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, I believe we have time for one more quick question during this segment, please. Giselle? Unmute yourself.
Hi. Thank you, Hannah. What's interesting for me is the change of attitude in your personal life, the way you react to life, the way you react to life on life's terms. How this, we call it emotional sobriety, happened to you. Which tools did you use? Did you pay specific attention towards this, the change of attitude, or it's just a byproduct of the steps and service?
I think it evolved slowly by giving service and by learning from other people. That's okay to listen to someone else who has the opposite opinion, you know, like group conscious and all, slowly but surely, because even in program, when I first gave service, I mean, I knew what I was doing. They always made me treasurer because I used to be a tax accountant. And if somebody else said they didn't like it that way, I thought, how can they do that? But today I'm open-minded, but my sense of humor and my attitude, it evolved, it changed slowly because life was serious quite a few years into program until I slowly but surely loosened up. And it's funny, the more health problems I have, the more I laugh about myself. I don't know if I think it's curing it, but that's what I do.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. How are we doing on time, Kathy?
We have a minute and 27 seconds left.
Okay, does anyone have a burning desire? Otherwise, we will take our break. Our 5-minute break. Anyone have a burning desire? Okay, let me get on the screen. Okay. Okay. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. There is, I'm sorry. Is that
Jamie?
I'm the crazy one. Hello. Hi, Jamie, compulsive overeater.
Okay, we have a couple minutes. Jamie, go for it.
Yep, 2 seconds. Okay, so the question is, sometimes I see myself in the mirror as a 900-pound person. And then sometimes I see myself in the mirror as a teeny person, and or I beat myself up lately sometimes. And I'm wondering if you have any tips how to, I'm not 900 pounds, if you get my drift. So, you know what I mean? Sometimes I don't know how to handle it. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You know, Jamie, it took me a long time. I remember the first time it was another person in program, and we were at some kind of an event because we used to do birthday celebrations and all when we had birthdays in OA and all that stuff. We don't seem to do that anymore. And I don't know what it was. And she looked at me and she said, "You're so tiny." And then she said, "And you have the most shocked look in your eyes and on your face, like, who, me?" It took a long time before I realized, where the head realized, that the body was actually slim. Because I think that's it. Even when I was on diets many times, I never got to what I called my, in those days we called it goal weight. But when I got thinner, I never believed it because I felt so bad. The inside felt so bad and it wasn't acceptable. I always admired crazy people like Twiggy. Some of you are old enough to know her. And I actually met the person who knows her now, and she looks more like a normal person, I was told. But anyway, those are the people that I admired, if I only were like them. And today, it's okay to be like me. And somebody else said about the hanging skin. Well, I came, I was 37. It wasn't too bad. Now it's hanging. But because of my leukemia, I can't even wear short sleeves anymore. So I have to cover up, wear a hat. And all this hanging skin is hidden, right?
Thank you. Thank you. And I'd like to say something about that, Jamie. Give me a call. I mean, there is, that's called body dysmorphia. But also when I came in the program, I heard in meetings, we have our magnifying mind. I mean, I often will do that with the mirror to this day. I've made friends with it. It doesn't go away. But many of us do what I have heard is our reality checks. I mean, some people have a certain piece of clothing. Because I've made friends with the scale is my perfect reality check. I mean, I know, you know, height and weight charts, we have a moderate weight or whatever you feel comfortable in your skin. And then, you know, achieving that, maintaining that. And then just acknowledge that I say for me, that's part of the illness. Hi, don't need you today. Thank you for sharing. And I move on. So that's just a little bit about that. I had to pipe in about that. Okay, we're having our next break. We're having our 5-minute break. Okay, it's 5:07. We're doing great.